Chapter 30. For 2 days, Uli didn't speak or eat or drink. Vi drove them at a grueling pace along the Queen's Road, heading west and then north. The first night they passed the great estates of the Wadrinner nobility. By the time they stopped, a few hours after sunrise, they were in farmland. The fields were bare, the rolling hills covered with the irregular stubble of the harvested spelt. The first day, Uli waited until Vi had been breathing regularly for about 10 minutes. Then she bolted for her horse. She hadn't even untied the beast before Vi yanked her away. The second day, Uli waited for an hour. She got up quietly enough that Vi almost missed it. Uli got the tether undone that time and nearly jumped out of her clothes when she turned to reach for the horse's head and saw Vi standing behind her, hands on hips. Both times Vi beat her. She was careful not to injure the girl. No broken bones or scars for this one. She wondered if she was being too easy on the girl. But she'd never beaten a child before. Vi was used to killing men, used to giving talent strength to her muscles and letting her victims deal with the consequences. If she did that with Uli, the child would die. That didn't fit Vi's plans. By the third day, Uli wasn't doing well. She still hadn't taken a drink. She refused anything Vi offered, and she was losing strength. Her lips were cracked and parched, her eyes red. Vi couldn't help but feeling a grudging admiration. The girl was tough, no doubt about it. Vi could stand pain better than most people, but she hated not eating. When she was 12, Hugh had routinely withheld her food, giving her only one meal a day, so she wouldn't get fat. He'd put her back on full meals when he decided it was all going to her tits, but worse than the starving were the times he'd withheld water because he thought she was being lazy. The bastard never did grasp the concept of a woman's cramps. She'd had to pretend the thirst didn't bother her because she'd known if she let it show, it would have become his favorite punishment. "Look, ugly," she said, as she made camp in a small valley as the sun began to rise. "I don't give a shit if you die. You are more useful to me alive than dead, but not by much. Kylar will follow me to Cenaria now, either way. You, on the other hand, would probably like to see Kylar again. Right?" Uli stared back at her with sunken eyes full of hate. "And I'd guess he'd kick your ass if you die for no reason, so hey, if you want to keep starving, you'll die pretty soon. Tomorrow, I'll have to tie you to the saddle and you might not make it through the night. That inconveniences me, but it hurts Kylar more. If you'd rather die like a kitten than stay alive and fight me, go ahead. But you're not impressing anyone." Vi put a skin of water in front of Uli and set about securing the horses. She wasn't worried about Uli escaping now, the girl was too weak. But Vi talent-locked the ropes anyway. She was going to sleep today, damn it. The rolling hills were covered with forests, broken now and then by a small village in a group of farm fields. The road was still broad and well-traveled, though. They'd made excellent time. There was no way to tell how far ahead of Kylar they were, but Vi had avoided villages, and she had no doubt that had given Kylar precious hours on them. Yesterday evening, she'd traded the horses. If Kylar had somehow divined which tracks were theirs among the many, he'd be thrown. Still, at the rate they'd been traveling, they'd pass numerous other parties, and though she could swaddle herself in a formless cloak that disguised her sex and identity, there was no disguising that Uli was a child. Nor was there any practical way to pass unseen on the barren hills they'd already come through. Usually, they'd just barreled past the traders' wagons and farmers' carts. It was an uneasy balance. They made better time on the road, but they were more likely to be recognized. Her only contact with Kylar had been when she'd tried to kill him at the Drake's house. Ironically enough, King Gunder had hired Vi, who'd tried to assassinate his son, to kill Kylar, who'd tried to protect him. She'd had Kylar under her hips and under her knife the very day she took the contract. She'd liked him. He'd been surprisingly calm for a man in his situation. Calm and a little charming, if you thought lame humor in the face of death was cute. And she would have killed him. But she'd hesitated. No, not hesitated. It hadn't been lack of will that stayed her hand that day so much as pride that she'd accomplished such a difficult job so quickly. Hugh never complimented her work. Though, under duress, Kylar's compliments had seemed genuine, and there weren't that many people a wet boy could talk shop with. So Vi had given in to the temptation Kylar had laid out for her, stalling so obviously that she'd let it work. Then the do-gooder count had broken into the room, and Kylar landed a knife in her shoulder as she escaped. Months later, her shoulder still throbbed at times. She'd lost a little flexibility, despite instantly heading to the witch Hugh used for his healing. Next time, she wouldn't hesitate. She knew she should feel elated that she'd killed Jarl. She was free now, a master wet boy. Hugh would have no say over anything in her life, and if he tried, she could kill him without worrying about the repercussions in the Sakage. That is, if the Sakage survived whatever the God King had planned. I killed Jarl. The thought wouldn't go away. Hadn't gone away for 2 days. I killed the man who was the closest thing I've ever had to a friend. There hadn't been much to the kill. Any child could climb up on a roof and shoot an arrow. She'd wanted to miss, hadn't she? She could have missed. She could have just not taken the shot. She could have gone inside and joined Kylar and Jarl and fought against the God King. But she hadn't. She'd killed. And now she was alone again, going somewhere she didn't want to go, taking a little girl against her will, forcing a man she respected to follow her into a trap. You are a cruel god, Nysos. Could you not leave me with more than dust and ashes, I, who serve you so faithfully? From my knife and my loins flow rivers of blood and semen. Do I not deserve an honored place for that? Do I not deserve one friend? She coughed and blinked rapidly. She bit her tongue until it threatened to bleed. I will not cry. Nysos can have his blood and semen, but he will never have my tears. Curse you, Nysos. But she didn't say it aloud. She had served her god too long to risk his wrath. She had even made a pilgrimage of sorts. It had been on her way to a kill, to a small town in the Sethi wine country that was holy to Nysos. The harvest festival was dedicated to the god. Wine flowed freely. Women were expected to abandon themselves to whatever passion moved them. They even had an odd form of storytelling where men stood on a stage holding masks and enacting, while the audience watched, a three-part cycle full of the suffering of mortals and their need for gods to straighten it out, followed by a bawdy, vicious comedy that seemed to make fun of everything in the village, even the writer of the enactment. The town loved it. They clapped and wailed and sang along drunkenly with the holy songs and fucked like rabbits. For a week, no one was allowed to turn down a sexual advance. For Vi, it turned into a long week. It was one time in her life that she'd felt justified in complaining about being beautiful. She'd taken to wearing baggy clothing in the hopes she would entice fewer men. All that service, Nysos, for what, for life? Hugh's nearing 40, and for all that he says he serves you, the only time a god's name passes his lips is in curses. By the time Vi came back to where the bedrolls were laid out, Uli had finished the entire bag of water. She looked like she was about to be sick. If you throw up on those blankets, you'll sleep in them dirty, Vi said. Kylar's going to kill you, Uli said, even if you are a girl. I'm not a girl, I'm a bitch, and don't you forget it. Vi tossed the bag with their food at Uli, who dropped it. Eat slow and not much, or you'll puke and die. Uli took her advice, and soon flopped down on her bedroll, and was asleep in seconds. Vi stayed up. She was tired. She only thought this much when she was exhausted. It did no good to think. It was worthless. She busied herself making the camp invisible. It was a foggy morning. They weren't far from the road, but they were in a small hollow. The stream came burbling down from the Silver Bear Hills with enough volume that most of the noise the horses might make would be covered, and with the cold camp they'd made, the human presence was barely notable here. She'd done her best to hide the horses behind a thicket. She squatted with her back to a tree and tried to convince her mind how tired her body was. In the distance, she heard a clatter. It was dampened by the fog, but it could only be one thing. Horses. She drew a sword and a knife and dipped the knife into her poison sheath. She looked at Uli and considered trying to magically silence the girl, but it would expose her, and she didn't know if it would work anyway. So she just pressed her back to a tree and peered toward the sound. Moments later, Kylar appeared, leading two horses. He passed 20 paces away. He must have been riding almost straight through, switching from horse to horse. He barely slowed as he approached the ford. Vi's horse stomped a foot, and one of the horses Kylar was leading neighed. Kylar cursed and jerked the reins. Uli rolled over as Kylar splashed through the stream. The horses climbed the other bank and clattered into the distance. Kylar never even turned his head. Vi chuckled and lay down. She slept well. When she awoke that evening, Uli was still asleep. That was good. Vi didn't have time to chase the girl. In her place, another kidnapper would have just bound the girl and been done with it. But the strongest ropes weren't the kind that bound hands. Hopelessness was Vi's weapon, not hemp. Ropes of Uli's own devising would bind her forever. Ropes of my own devising. I know all about that, don't I? She kicked Uli to wake her, but not as hard as she meant to. The girl's salvation had been so close, and she'd never even known it.